Blog Talk Radio.
3, 2, 1. Notes from the Field brings the dark side of justice to stunning reality through acclaimed writer and actress Anna Deavere Smith. Her one-person presentation reaches HBO Saturday night. Hear director and Academy Award nominee Christy Z when she joins me next in an internet radio exclusive. Also ahead, the latest on NBC's Olympic viewership, a pair of Disney Channel moves, our latest classic trivia question winner, and a new question for this week. And a shout-out to NBC's unsung curling champion, who might just be a good game show host for a game show that I think should come to these United States. Hello, everyone, and happy President's Day 2018. I'm Simon Applebaum, live from New York on Blog Talk Radio, and presented on the iHeartRadio Podcast Network. This just in, tomorrow will be televised. Brought to you by Audible.com, a leading provider of spoken audio entertainment information that will transform the way you hear the world. Listen to audiobooks whenever and wherever you want. Get a free book when you sign up for a 30-day trial at audibletrial.com/televised. More details, including a special President's Day offer, still in play later in the program. Happy to have you with us for the Pro Mobile Television on this special holiday edition, celebrating both Lincoln and Washington's birthday in the same day. 48 degrees top of the hour here in New York. Wonderful guests coming your way in the hour ahead. And we invite you, as always, to be part of the program. All it takes is raising your voice, picking up the phone, and dialing in at 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. That number is good anywhere you're attacking us across the country or around the world here on Blog Talk Radio. We have another way to get involved. It's our chat room, DiamondApple04 by name. You will find it at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. It's there for the entire hour, so get in the room and get your voice heard. While the program is on the air, you can connect others by using Facebook Timeline. Click on the Facebook icon on your Blog Talk screen, follow the instructions, and other people can be live with you. Christy Z from Notes from the Field on HBO will be live with us, plus some other things, too, after these news notes. NBC has yet to release viewership results for its primetime Winter Olympics coverage the last two nights. However, preliminary Nielsen figures suggest the combo NBC-NBC Sports Network coverage this weekend has set a viewership low in the action from South Korea. Moreover, NBC's solo coverage appears way down from viewership results in Sochi, Russia, 4 years ago. We're talking about anywhere from 10% decline or more. Nevertheless, NBC still remains tops among broadcast networks in prime time every night of these Winter Games. When factoring all this, the performance of the U.S. team, now in a four-way tie for sixth place in overall medals, and still with just 5 gold medals to its credit. Two 2019 moves by Disney Channel to talk about, renewing Andy Mack for a third season, and going forward with a second sequel to its uber-popular fantasy musical, Descendants, with much of the original cast, including Joe Cameron and Sophia Carson, back. It looks like we have a third player out to fashion end-to-end process using blockchain and cryptocurrencies to create, finance, and distribute TV content without middlemen. Alongside Singer DTV and LiveTree Adept, both of which have been featured on this program in recent months, here comes Group Media TFO from Canada, who says a prototype for their venture will start a test run March 1st. The Canadian Media Fund is providing major cash for this effort, which is circulating this week at the Bronau Film Market in Germany. Separately, LiveTree has extended its crypto fund drive by another month. That crusade was scheduled to wrap next week. More news from Berlin. Game of Thrones writer Frank Dolger is putting together Metagrio Films, out to produce and present new scripted TV series worldwide. Betafilm and ZDF Enterprise, both based in Germany, will be co-investors. And Travel Channel will go forward with Mysterious Islands, the new series launching this fall. Production begins in April. And that is news notes for today. We'll tell you where our first guest, who is scheduled to be in this half hour, is at. And Christy Z from Notes of the Field will be joining us later this half hour. But first, before we get to all of that, we'll have some books on the fine people at Audible.com. One of the new books out is All American Murder by the popular author James Patterson, and it deals with the real-life situation involving former New England Patriots superstar Aaron Hernandez, who was convicted of multiple murders and ultimately took his own life in prison. You can get that book, if you like, with a trial run with Audible.com. All you got to do is go to this website, audibletrial.com/televised, get that book or one free audiobook of your choice, and a one-month trial of the service. Audible.com is the leading provider of spoken digital audio entertainment, information, and inspiration. There's over 180,000 titles to choose from, and you listen to them on any device, including whatever you are hearing this on right now with Blog Talk Radio or iHeartRadio. All you have to do is sign up at audibletrial.com/televised, You get that one free audio book of your choice, a 1 month trial of service too. Or if you would like to jump right in and subscribe, you can. If you do, there's a special presidency offer still in play where you can get your first 3 months of Audible for $8.95 a month, 40% off the actual price. That's the first 3 months of your Audible subscription at only $8.95 a month. That is, again, 40% off the regular price. So what you have to do to find out about either the free trial offer or just jump in with a subscription, go to audibletrial.com/televised. That's audibletrial.com/televised. Remember, audible.com is the leading provider of spoken digital audio entertainment information inspiration. It's also a proud development partner of the 2018 New York Television Festival. Remember, Audible will transform the way you hear the world. Why? Because at Audible, listening is the new reading. Well, going into today, we were hoping this very half hour to bring you Olin Rogers. He is the creator and executive producer behind the new tune from TBS called Final Space. It's from Conan O'Brien's production company, Kanako, and it's scheduled to debut next Monday night at 10:30 Eastern and Pacific Time, following a new episode of American Dad. And with the Final Space, TBS is creating a brand new animation hour. Well, Olin woke up this morning and found out he had no voice. And that's how we found out from TBS that he could not be with us this day. So we are going to try to reschedule him either for our next episode on Wednesday or our episode on Friday. We'll keep you posted through Facebook and Twitter what he happens. But we're sorry that Olin woke up on the, unfortunately, the wrong side of the bed today. We hope he's feeling much better, and we hope to have him on, as I said, thanks to TBS's support, either on Wednesday or Friday show. In the meantime, you can catch his series, Final Space, next Monday night, 10:30 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time on TBS. Check your locals where TBS is available in your area on cable and satellite. For more details about the program, all you have to do is go to www.tbs.com. That's www.tbs.com. By the way, I want to welcome Rick Webb, our friend from Philadelphia, into our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. So, Rick, if you have a question or comment for Christy Z, when she comes on board later this half hour from Notes from the Field on HBO, put it in the room or give us that call, 646-652-2906. It gives a little time to offer some thoughts about a game show that I think should have a shot here, and I know just the host for it. So a little bit of a game show thought and some shout-out, too. Before we get to that, though, we have a classic trivia question winner of our classic trivia question that we posed last week. Over the weekend, we got a winner, and that's Martin Lafferty from Chester, Maryland. The question we posed was this. Yes, it was dealing with the Olympics. What was the first televised Olympics in the United States? We wanted a four-part answer. The year, winner of Summer Games, the place, and the network. The answer, it was the 1960 Winter Olympic Games from Squaw Valley, California on CBS, which in fact not only ran those games, but also the games there that year from Rome. Remember that before the International Olympic Committee did its crazy thing, we used to have Winter and Summer Games in the same year. Remember how special that was? IOC, maybe we should bring that back. That might help the ratings, by the way, for NBC. Anyway, that was the answer. And I want to thank Marty Lafferty. Marty, by the way, is a former network executive. He's done a lot of work in the area of distributed computing. Also, the great stuff over the years with his career. And thank you for winning the question. And we'll have our new classic trivia question for you in our next half hour. If you know the answer, email me, SimonApple04@yahoo.com. It's SimonApple04@yahoo.com. First, get the answer. We may have a prize for you. So stay tuned. We'll give you the question and see how fast you can answer it. And by the way, if you missed the question when we posed it in our second half hour, don't worry. I will repeat it tomorrow morning on Facebook and on Twitter at UBC Simon TWBT. That's at UBC Simon TWBT. Last Monday on our program, one of our guests was Joni Day, the executive producer of the revival of the classic game show Beat the Clock, which is currently running at 7:30 Monday through Thursday nights on Universal Kids, the network formerly known as Sprout. And toward the end of our discussion, we got into game shows that we thought would love to be revived, classic game shows, whether it's The Names of Sand, Concentration, et cetera, et cetera. Well, afterward, it hit me, well, what about a game show that hasn't been done in the United States but has been done elsewhere that could make it in this wonderful country? Well, I have got the answer for you, and because of the fact that we don't have our first guest, we got the time to talk about it. In the meantime, we also have the opportunity to salute somebody who has done a wonderful job so far in covering the NBC Olympics. And we'll get to that in a moment, because I think he'd be the perfect host for this show. What Bill Cullen was to game shows here in the United States, Bob Monkhouse was in England. He was the most popular game show host around in the late 70s, 80s, and 90s. Could not Mr. Beast. He did the original Family Feud in England called Family Fortunes. He did a revival of the $64,000 question, one of the big cash prizes ever done in pounds in England. Also, he was the host of Celebrity Squares. Yes, that was Hollywood Squares in England and had a very long run with that show. But perhaps his most popular program was a show that ran from 1984 until 1990. It was a weekly primetime show called Bob's Full House. And it took the concept of bingo into a playable format that I think would work really well here in the United States, either as a daily or a weekly game show. So, TSN, other networks, pay attention. Bob's Full House has four players, and these four players all have a bingo card, which is electronically produced in front of their podium. And the idea of the game is to fill out their bingo card. First one who does it wins. The game has three rounds, and the beautiful thing about this game is that in the course of play, all four contestants have an opportunity to win prizes. So let's explain. The first round is called Four Corners. By the way, when each person has a bingo card, none of the numbers are anybody else's card. So it's the different 1 to 75 numbers spread out among the four cards. The first round is called Four Corners, where you have to fill out the four corners of your card. If you do it before anyone else does, through answering questions, rapid-fire fashion, you win and you get a choice of three prizes to choose from for winning the round. The second round is called middle line, where you have to fill in every space on your middle line. By the way, each person's bingo card has three lines. So you have to fill in the middle line, and you have to do it by answering specific questions, specific categories that correspond to groups of numbers, like one from 1 to 10, one from 10 to 20, 11 to 20, and so on and so forth. And the categories are shuffled after all four contestants have a round of play. Again, if you're first to fill out that middle line before anyone else, you win and you win a prize. However, if at some point you land on a lucky number that is corresponding to your card, and each person's card has a lucky number in the middle line, and you ask that question, you win a mystery prize. It turns out to be quite good. Sometimes it's a booby prize, but the booby prize ends up to be really good. And again, you win the round, you pick the prize, one of three displayed. And finally, there is the rapid-fire question-answer round where you have to fill the rest of your card in. The first one who does that wins the game and, again, chooses three prizes from among three prizes, one of their choice. It's a great format. It works very well. It's rapid-fire. It also gives an opportunity, by the way, at the beginning for Monkhouse to showcase his humor and also talk to the contestants, which he does at length. He was one of those hosts, by the way, British hosts, by the way, have more time than usual to talk to contestants as compared to what we do in the United States. Now, the person who wins the game goes on a bonus round where they can win a trip to somewhere in the world. The location is spelled out on a board, which has different numbers, again, corresponding to bingo numbers. You have a minute to answer up to 15 questions before time runs out. For every question, the clock stops, so that you answer correctly, clock stops, you pick one of the numbers. The number either becomes a letter or it becomes cash in pounds. If you get the word spelled out of the location of your trip, you win the trip before time runs out. If not, you win whatever money you accumulate along the way. Anyway, no matter what, you win. That's the great thing about this show. There are so many opportunities for the contestants to win, whether or not you win the game in total. Monkhouse was a joy to watch as a host. He does a short monologue before he goes to the contestants. It's fun. It's joyful. Pretty good stuff. And I think it's the kind of a format that would really work in the United States. Now, in order for this to work, because it's called Bob's Full House, you need a host that I think could really manage the game and manage the contestants. And I got just the person. Someone, in fact, actually did try his hand at hosting. And he's someone you currently see right now if you're watching CNBC's coverage from 5 to 8 p.m. Eastern Time of curling. He's Fred Rogan. If you know your sports in Los Angeles, you know that Fred Rogan, for nearly four decades, could you believe this, is the most popular local sportscaster in that city and one of the best in the country. He has done some national shows before. He did some NFL football for NBC before they did not do Sunday afternoon football anymore. He also, for a couple of years, 1990, did Rogan's Heroes, which was a wonderful clip show that was on the NBC-owned stations for 2 years and syndication elsewhere. And Fred Rogan is someone who has a great demeanor, has a fun attitude when he covers sports. He gives some gravitas to it, but he's really fun to be with, and I love the way he covers curling on what he calls CNBC Curling, Nothing But Curling. That's the network he calls it. And he's just been absolutely delighted. I think he's been the most unsung person in NBC's coverage of Olympics. and you wish he would do more. By the way, you know he's done curling the last couple Winter Olympics for CNBC. He's also done boxing coverage for CNBC during the Summer Games, the last one in Rio nearly 2 years ago. I think Fred deserves an opportunity to do a game show. A couple years ago, he did do one for GSN called The Money Game. Only ran a season. It was basically done without a lot of people knowing about it, and I thought he did a good job. I saw him host the show. I thought it was an interesting show. It was called The Money List, and really, really good job. I think Fred Full House, with that format and with Rogan, could work beautifully. Somebody, Kristen Todman, Framing Fremantle Media, GSN, somebody should really consider adapting Bob's Full House and make it Fred Rogan's Full House and put it on either as a weekly show or a daily show, either on some network or in syndication. I really think this would work so well. And incidentally, if you want to see Bob's Full House, you can. Just go to YouTube anytime, put in Bob's Full House. You get a lot of good episodes from the run, both beginning and end. He also did some holiday specials over Christmas time where celebrities would play for charity, and just terrific. And Monkhouse, like I said, the Bill Cullen of game show hosts in England, just a joy to watch. And I just think Fred Rogan, who just has that kind of twinkle you like as a sportscaster or as a game show host, I just think he would be really good. Don't forget, Dick Enberg did pretty well as a game show host when he was around. So somebody give Fred Rogan that chance. And no matter what, NBC, how about giving Fred Rogan more of an opportunity to anchor Olympics coverage 2 years from now in the next Summer Games, okay? That would be really, really good. Again, if you want to see Bob's Full House, check it out on YouTube 24/7, youtube.com. I think you'll really enjoy the show. And for everybody else tuning in, maybe somebody from GSN listening in or somebody from a network, try adapting Bob's Full House and get Fred Rogan in on it. I think he would really enjoy the opportunity. This is Tomorrow Televised. We are the program all about the tube. We are with you Mondays and Fridays, keeping Eastern New Pacific. We have three episodes for you this week, Wednesday and Friday as well. Coming up on our Wednesday episode, we've got prolific TV episodic writer Scott Williams. His work includes the most popular show right now on broadcast television, NCIS. He's done Castle, Bones, other procedural shows. But he also has a very special project off the camera that's approaching a milestone. It's called Shane's Inspiration. It came out of personal tragedy, and he has taken that tragedy and made it something that has impacted positively the lives of many, many kids across the country. Scott Williams will be one of our guests. Also, from the new WGN America series, Shoot the Messenger, co-creator and lead director, Suze Sutherland. That's on Wednesday's episode. Then coming up on Friday, my lead guest will be from the popular daytime series that premiered last fall, Pickles and Ben, that's Kelly Pickle and Ben Aaron. We'll have executive producer Leva Espanier. That's all coming up Wednesday and Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, right here on Tomorrow We Televise. And 1 week from today, from USA Network's important new series, Unsolved, directed by Emmy Award nominee Anthony Hemingway, we'll have the co-executive producer and former LAPD investigator Greg Kading. He worked on the subject matter of Unsolved, the mysterious death of Biggie Smalls and Tupac Shakur. Greg Kading from Unsolved, co-executive producer, former LAPD investigator. He's live with us next Monday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. So we hope you make us a regular habit. And remember, on all of our programs, when we're live, you can be part of the show. All you have to do is call in at 646-652-2906 or use our chat room, Simon Apple 04 by name. And remember, our chat room is open throughout the episode. Rick Webb, our friend from Philadelphia, is already in. So just get involved. Remember, all you have to do is call our chat room in, and we hear you. Why? Because what you say matters. So be involved. We really do appreciate it. And once again, I want to remind you that in addition to our program, I also write columns for MediaVillage.com. MediaVillage is a popular media commentary analysis site run by Jack Myers. Good friends Stuart Elliott and Martin are also are my fellow columnists there. So check us out what we do. That's MediaVillage.com, MediaVillage.com. Remember also that you can check out our program in various ways on podcasts. On the iHeartRadio Podcast Network, just go to iHeartRadio.com, put in Tomorrow We Televise in the search bar, click and you're right there. You can also, as well, go to the top of the screen, click on categories, and then click entertainment of the category, and you'll find us there as well with many of our recent episodes and all of our episodes so far from 2018. You can also check us out on podcasts at iTunes.com and Apple TV's iTunes podcast app. If you don't have Apple TV, well, buy it at an Apple store near you, or order it online anytime you like. I'll tell you what, while we are getting ready for our guest of the day, Christy Z, from the new HBO special, Notes from the Field, featuring Anna Deavere-Smith, let's give you our next classic trivia question for this week. Remember Lassie? Believe it or not, Lassie was on the air for 19 years, 17 on CBS from 1954 to 1971, and syndication in 1971-73. It is the fourth longest-running dramatic program, scripted TV program, on network television. Network and includes syndicated television. 19 seasons. When it started in 1954, Tommy Redding was the lead child. Jan Clayton, who won an Emmy Award nomination for her role, was the mother. And here's our question. Who played the original father figure on Lassie? Who played the original father figure on Lassie? And I'll tell you what. Let me give you a hint. The name includes the city. The name includes the city. We need the full name, first name, last name. So again, here's the question. Who played the first father figure on Lassie back in 1954? If you know the answer, email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. It's simonapple04@yahoo.com. Please include your name and where you're from. And if you missed the question just now, we will repeat it in our second half hour. This Saturday night, HBO is presenting a unique dramatic special. It's based on a one-woman show by the acclaimed activist, actress, and writer Anna Deavere-Smith. It's called Notes from the Field, and it deals with a very comprehensive look at the criminal justice system and why so many teenagers and 20-somethings fall under the cracks and end up incarcerated. The program begins at 8 p.m. on Saturday night. My first guest and my guest today is not only the director of this special, she also, nearly a decade ago, won an Academy Award and a BAFTA Award nomination for her work as art director on the acclaimed movie Revolutionary Road, co-starring Leonardo DiCaprio and Kate Winslet. Joining us live from New York, Christy Z. Christy, happy President's Day to you and welcome to the program.
Thank you. Thank you. Happy President's Day to you, too.
It's a pleasure to have you on, Christy, and tell us how you got involved with Notes from the Field.
Well, it's a long story. I've had a wonderful working relationship with a wonderful director named Jonathan Demme, who sadly passed away last year. And he has, over the years, been extremely supportive of me and my work. And he actually produced something else for HBO that I did way back in, like, 1990. And I got a phone call from his producer, Gary Getzman, around March of last year, and he explained to me that Jonathan wanted me to work on the film as a production designer, but that also he was not doing well because he had cancer. And so he asked if I would be willing and able to take over the project as director if the need arose. And sadly, it did. And so Jonathan handed over the reins to me, and I went ahead and directed this project, of course, with Anna and HBO's permission and support. And so that's how it all came to pass. And it was an absolutely fantastic experience working with Anna and working with HBO. They're both just an incredible gift that he gave to me before he passed, which he sadly did.
Demme was not only a wonderful film director, he did some terrific TV projects as well, both fiction and nonfiction. One I think will be going down as one of the top film directors and craftspeople of our generation when the record is ultimately written. How did your work as a production designer help you to direct this particular program?
Well, actually, it was perfect for me because the first thing I did was I started by pretty much working with my art director, Doug Husty, and he and I together put together the set that we needed for this film. And it was always in Anna's mind and Jonathan's mind that we should create a simple set that felt a little bit like a school auditorium. And that's what we sort of channeled a lot of what public school auditoriums look like, and we added sort of iconic elements to that would give us the sense that we had been or were in a version of a school auditorium, which carries over the same theme as what the film is about. And then on top of that, we decided that we would use these very large and fantastic LCD screens, which would be behind Anna and along the sides of the stage, so that as we were doing all the different characters that she portrays, these screens would come up and have different backgrounds. And the backgrounds would be emblematic of the places where these characters originally were and where Anna interviewed them, because all of these characters, 19 of them, are from the 250 that she went around the country and interviewed. And so all of these characters are verbatim interviews that Anna had with them that she then absorbed and personified and put on the stage. So the production design element was, you know, the screens as well as the actual stage that we had. And that was very, very exciting to be able to select the backgrounds, which were, in fact, in a way, sets. So that plus all the six cameras that we had shooting her from every possible angle for 2 days became the structure of the film.
Mm-hmm. How did Smith decide of these 250 people she interviewed from all different elements of the criminal justice system, or all different elements of people impacted by the system? How did she decide, I'm going to have these 19 characters come alive on stage?
Well, you know, that's a very good question. And yesterday, actually, she was asked that question by a group of people that we had with a sort of Q&A. And it was a very, very moving discussion, because she literally went around the country pinpointing people that she had found out about through, I'm sure, enormous amounts of research, and went and interviewed them. And then after she interviewed them, then she had to cull out of this 250 the 19, 18 characters that she plays. And that was a very long and arduous project that she then turned into a play. This was a play that was at the Signature Theater in New York City back a year ago this fall. So I guess that would be 2016. So she had a play that she did of this to start with. And her ability to choose from all of these different characters who never would have met. They would never have been in the same room. And what she does is she synthesizes what they said and turns it into a dialogue and a conversation that somehow or other magically comes and becomes an actual conversation about what's going on in this country as far as the whole criminal justice system is concerned, education, jobs, you know, the minorities of this country and how disenfranchised they are.
You're hearing Christy Z. She is the Oscar and BAFTA Award nominee for work a decade ago, art directing on Revolutionary Road, the film with Leonardo DiCaprio and Kate Winslet, which won quite a few nominations and awards with a bunch of different organizations. And now she is directing Anna Deavere Smith in her acclaimed one-woman presentation, Notes for the Field. It happens this Saturday night on HBO, 8 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time. Christy joins us live from New York this half hour ahead on Smart We Televised, and she'll stay with us most of the rest of the program. If you have a question or comment for her, give us a ring, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. You'll find it on our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. Rick Webb, our friend from Philadelphia, is in the room. We come back more with Christy, and again, we'll showcase our classic trivia question of the week. But first, we pause at the bottom of the hour for web identification. This is www.blogtalkradio.com, more than 25 million listeners around the world every month and growing. It's your home for Money Wise Woman. Be empowered with the conversation this Wednesday night, 9:30 Eastern, 6:30 Pacific, only on Blog Talk Radio. That's BTR available to you 24/7 at YouTube.com. And don't forget that our program is also available on the iHeartRadio Podcast Network. If you want to get recent episodes of our show, go to iHeartRadio.com, put Tomorrow Be Televised in the search bar, click it, and you get them. Welcome back to the second half of this President's Day 2018 edition of the program All About Television. Simon Applebaum with you live with New York. And joining me here, Chrissy Z, the Oscar nominee for Revolutionary Road, who joins us because she is directing the HBO special Notes from the Field, taking place this Saturday night, featuring acclaimed writer, activist, and actress and author Anna DeBeer Smith. Chrissy, when you got to know Anna in preparing this story to direct her, what did you find out about her that you wanted to emphasize about not only about the role she's playing, but how she plays them?
Well, Anna is a very, very thorough artist in terms of her work. And one of the things that I was very impressed by was the fact that each of these characters had been studied meticulously for their diction, their voices, as well as their movements. And she has a movement coach and a diction and language coach in order to be able to embody the characters as best she can and even go beyond the characters in a sense, because she puts it through her own filter. And so what comes out on stage is a kind of amalgam, if you will, of her channeling the very people that she talked to start with, and then added to that was her own imprint. And so watching her create these characters was absolutely spellbinding. I was so impressed, not to mention the fact that this comes across as a two-hour play, and so she had to memorize all of it. It's a huge undertaking. And so that was also very, very impressive. She's highly organized. She cares about this issue just into the core of her soul. And so what she's really doing is she's speaking for these people. She's speaking for the people who are not being heard in this country, a lot of them. Although she also has the most remarkable way of deciding to do people like James Baldwin and John Lewis and Reverend Jamal Bryant. I mean, these are big public figures, and she's not cowed in the least by doing them, as well as, kids who've just gotten out of jail or who are on parole or parents of kids or lawyers who represent people who are being incarcerated. So she really runs the gamut. She plays men, she plays women, she plays kids, she plays older people. It's astonishing.
Mm-hmm. Now, how did you take that into filming or taping this? As you said, last half hour, you did this over the course of 2 days. Did you do it with a live audience, without an audience? Did you do it, did you decide to run it straight through several times? What was the approach?
Well, actually, we had 6 cameras running at once. It was like a rock and roll show. We had her on stage, and then we had 6 cameras that were positioned. Declan Quinn, who is our chief cinematographer, who has done this sort of thing before with actual rock performances, put cameras at different places around the stage, both wide angle, close up, handheld, steady cam, on dollies, locked off. I mean, there were all these different, we had 6 at once, and then we shot it. On the first day, we shot it with an audience, but it wasn't a huge audience. It was a small audience, but just enough to give Anna someone to, be talking to and also to get reactions from. And then the second day, we went ahead and did more close-ups and other things that we felt we still needed and some specials. Again, to, the same characters all over. So basically, Anna did the show twice in one day, and then one more time on the second day, plus some isolated bits in the afternoon. So in those 2 days, we wound up with basically 12 angles of the play that we then looked at very carefully and edited through and decided what takes we were going to use from each, and put it together, and actually needed to take some bits out because we wanted to make it 90 minutes as opposed to 2 hours, which is what the play was. So that became a very complicated and very important part of what is now the movie. And so Anna and I, in the editing room with Paul Snyder, who was our editor, who's absolutely amazing, we went through all of the characters, picked the takes we liked, put it together, figured out what we needed in terms of the, because there's a lot of what they call B-roll, which are the things that we put in and out of the, and around the characters to talk about them, you know, the characters themselves and what they either represented or what they saw or what they, you know, caused. I mean, in the case of Jamal Bryant, who was the minister, he delivered the eulogy for Freddie Gray. I mean, when you hear his speech, which we also had to synthesize because we couldn't keep the length, but the most important elements of his speech, you understand why Baltimore went crazy after the death of Freddie Gray, because he is so powerful, and what he was saying is so important. And actually, that's true from every angle. So it was a big editing process after we actually shot it.
Actually, one of the characters that Smith portrays is the camera person who caught those images of Gray in Baltimore.
Right. And Kevin, I believe, if I remember correctly, I mean, he works in a deli, and he was given a camera by a friend just to have, and he talks about why he filmed this and how important it was that he filmed the arrest of Freddie Gray, because you see it. You actually see his footage. And then you hear him talking about it. And it's a very moving and very upsetting story, of course. And hearing Kevin give us his innermost thoughts about why he did that in the first place, makes you realize that it's a very mighty tool for people who are in situations, and as we have seen in many other instances, where cameras recording what happens has changed the results and the verdict of what's going on in terms of abuse in the system of arrests and what have you, and it's because we can see it on the cameras. So there's no denying it, and that's what Kevin did. Kevin was an incredible character that we start with. We start after Cheryl and Eiffel, we start with him, and it's a very powerful way to start the film.
The Kevin we're talking about, incidentally, is Kevin Moore, and at one point he's quoted as saying through Smith, "The camera is the only thing we have to protect ourselves." And you mentioned you started with Kevin Moore's story. Did that sort of reverberate throughout all of the other characters that Smith portrayed? Is that, and you're directing this, is that the camera is the evidence? The camera becomes, in this case, a document by which all of us see how this justice system works or doesn't work.
I think it's that, and it's actually more than that. I think the camera is the witness. And it is an incredibly powerful witness. We start actually with Sherilyn Eiffel, who's actually being interviewed, who's doing a piece in front of an audience, and she's talking about, she's involved with the NAACP, and she talks about what state our country is in, and then we go from her to Kevin. And throughout the rest of the film, what you realize is that the camera is recording these people who really share with Anna their thoughts about how they're either living or not living in a honest and easy way, given the circumstances of their lives. I mean, a lot of the people she interviews have been in jail, or they're lawyers who represent people in jail. And they share these thoughts with her, and that's all to do with her and how she gives people the freedom and the ability to speak in a way that they don't ever have a chance to speak. And so the camera is recording Anna, who has recorded the original people, so that it's a sort of channeling of all this information, but it's done in a way that becomes palatable and entertaining, because also you see her changing, you know, she'll take a shirt off or she'll put some different shoes on, or, you know, she'll add a jacket or she'll put a sweater on or put a hat or something, just each time to give just the essence of each character that she represents. And that in and of itself is magic. So you're on the one hand, you're a viewer, but you're also inside the heads of these people. And that's what makes it also important and valuable.
Notes in the Field is Anna Deere Smith's one-woman presentation recorded before a live audience, and you can see it this Saturday night, 8 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time on HBO. We're telling Christy Z, who is the director of the presentation. She is also an Oscar nominee for a work a decade ago with Leonardo DiCaprio and Kate Winslet on the acclaimed movie Revolutionary Road. She joins us live this half hour in New York on Tomorrow Be Televised. Simon Applebaum with you live from the Big Apple. Happy to have you with us. 48 degrees at the top of the hour. A good President's Day to you and all, wherever you're listening to us on Blog Talk Radio or the iHeartRadio Podcast Network. If you have a question or comment for Christy, give us a call, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. That's the three episodes we're doing this week. Next one is Wednesday at our regular hour, 3 p.m. Eastern Pacific. Joining us will be NCIS, Bones, and other episodic TV writer Scott Williams. We'll talk about his work in that field, but also about a project he started at a personal tragedy called Shane's Inspiration. And it's celebrating a milestone these days. We'll talk to Scott about it live. Plus, from the new WGN American Mystery Series, Shoot the Messenger, which premieres next weekend, co-creator and lead director Suda Sutherland will be with us. That's all coming up Wednesday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Be Televised. And coming up on Friday, from the daytime talk show Pickler and Ben, just renewed for a second season by the Scripps Television Station family, we'll have executive producer Lisa X. Spanier. And a week from Monday, my lead guest will be from USA Network's new series, Unsolved, dealing with the unsolved murders of Biggie Smalls and Tupac Shakur, directed by Emmy nominee Anthony Hemingway, who's been on this program several times. We'll have co-executive producer and former Los Angeles Police Department investigator on these cases, Greg Kading. It should be a very special interview. That's coming up Monday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, right here on Tomorrow We Televise. Christy, when you're making the leap to directing, and it's like your major shot here, and you have somebody who is as brilliant in what she does as an actress and a writer as Anna Deere Smith, how do you collaborate? What is your approach, and what was her approach to you?
Well, you know, it was a pretty magical experience. I had done another movie, which is actually going to come out on American Masters in the fall, and it was a movie about an artist named Elizabeth Murray. It's called Everybody Knows Elizabeth Murray, and that's going to be on American Masters this fall. And she saw that film, so she knew what I was doing, and she actually said to me, "Man, you know, how did you get her to relax like that?" And I said, "Well, you know, I'm there just to record what's going on. I am really a pair of eyes, and I want to make those eyes available to as many people as possible, because I believe strongly in the message that Elizabeth Murray was making." She said, "Well, that's amazing, because, you know, I think she shared with me that she always feels a little uncomfortable when people are doing movies about her, or, you know, she's easy on the stage, like she's a miracle on the stage, but, you know, wants to be sure that when it comes down to being on television or in a film, that it's also equally representative of her work and her artistry." So I just basically said to her, and it's true, I said, "I'm going to make a container for you so that you can do your thing. And we will then put it together and make this available to a much wider population than would have normally, who are outside of the New York City area." So I think she liked that. And she also, you know, she respected me for my other work. You know, she kept saying, man, I want to be a shadow when you do one of your movies. I want to see how you do this. And I said, well, I want to be a shadow when you do another one of your interviews, because I think that's pretty cool, too. I think there's a mutual respect there. And I think we really do understand each other, and we know how hard it is to get things out in the wide world for other people to see, you know. And I think we just, you know, I understood her and she understood me, and we just kind of clicked, and that was what was so great about it too.
What do you and Anna hope will happen as a result of this presentation? What do both of you want to see the American public do or legislators do to impact the criminal justice system and make it more fair for underprivileged, for people who fall, as I mentioned earlier, fall through the cracks, you know, students in their, whether high school or college, whatever, who somehow go wayward, fall through the cracks, and so on?
Well, you know, the sad truth is that the criminal justice system is a huge industry right now. And it's an industry based on the inability of our society to help people who are in marginalized situations. And the marginalization has to do with poverty. And the shocking, shocking thing is that in our cities and in our towns, people who are not able to fend for themselves because of lack of jobs, lack of education, they fall into this trap of having to do, in order to survive, they have to do things like steal or deal in drugs or all these things that, you know, no society wants. But because they haven't been given an opportunity to better themselves and become working members of society, they fall off the track. And so it's got to start early. It's got to start in the schools, and the schools can't have police in them, because the police are only used to dealing with criminals. And you don't put somebody in jail because they're on their cell phones or because, you know, there are things in the film, when you see them, your jaw just drops open. Because, sadly, schools can't discipline the kids without the threat or even reality of police. And it's a two-way street. You know, parents have to be more responsible for their kids. Kids have to be more respectful of authority. Everybody's got to kind of keep their minds open to the fact that if they don't allow education to happen and teachers to do what they're hired to do, then everyone's going to wind up in jail. The jails get full. The industry of jails gets bigger and bigger because it is an industry now. It's a multi-billion dollar industry. So how do you dismantle that? So you really, I mean, what Anna's doing with this play, with the play and also with this film, is she's saying, we've got to get into a room together and we've got to talk about this. We have to talk and then we've got to do something. We have to make action happen. You know, kids need mentors. They need, you know, if their parents aren't available, then they need somebody else to mentor them, to give them a way of being in this world that doesn't cause disruption and chaos. And if they have mental issues, then they should be helped. You know, there are an enormous number of women of kids right now who have mental health issues that are not being helped or addressed. And so, if that's the case, and if there's such trauma in their lives because of poverty, then you've got to go back into the whole system at the very, very earliest of ages to help them move past their realities. And that's the hardest part of all. But I think if you get enough people to become aware that what we need in this country is mentors, leaders, organizations that can take kids, like Head Start, like, you know, things that we used to have in greater number to keep people, kids educated so that when they graduate from high school, they know how to read. There are so many people now, kids who graduate from high school who really don't know how to read, if they even get to the end of high school. You know, it's like prison or death.
Yeah. It's interesting, Christy, that as we are speaking right now outside the White House, there are students who are doing a lie-in who have been very impacted by what happened last week in Florida, the school shooting there.
Yeah.
And they have really hit a nerve because, you know, take away the politics, they, you know, with all that we have learned, that the person who did that shooting should never have had that gun, or actually should have been apprehended beforehand. But it just seems that whatever side of that spectrum you're on, there is a connecting point here, and that is that the students want something of action. They want the issue to be addressed. They want to go to an environment where they can learn and not have to face, you know, every day, oh, my God, is this going to be my last day on earth because someone gets into the school with a gun who should have been taken care of in some manner way before. Because the danger signs were flashed and somebody reacted. Somebody took action.
Well, I think that that's the biggest thing. People have to, in all of our cities and all of our towns, when there is a kid who's in trouble, then you can't just let them run around without showing some help, giving them help. I mean, that kid that did that terrible thing that just happened, he was living with another family because he had just lost his mom and there was nobody else who was able to take care of him. And he was a lost soul to start with. And however he managed to get a hold of the weapon and, you know, however he managed to find out that this was something he needed to do, this was a cry for help. And he, you know, hurt people. You know what I'm saying? Hurt people. And there are plenty of people out there right now, kids of all ages, who are in traumatized situations. And people are not flagging them, not giving them the help that they need, maybe because they're overwhelmed. You know, it could be that, you know, there's one character in the play, Stephanie Williams, who was in this high school, and she had been there as a teacher. It wasn't a high school. It was middle school, and she was a teacher. She had been there for 3 days, and she just describes in the most amazing way what it was like to be dealing with a crowd of kids whose lives are so intense that school is like nothing to them, and trying to give them a reason to, she said it was like being in prison without a gun. That's what she talks about it as. And not being able to get the people that she needs, that Stephanie needed, to help some of these kids. Because some of the stories of the stories that these kids are going through are, it's so dramatic and problematic and difficult that school is like barely, you know, it's the tip of an iceberg, but what the pain and the suffering that they're going through has already happened. So it's an overall effort that has to be made to bring kids who are in trouble out from the holes that they're in and lend them a hand. And the kids who are lying in front of the White House right now are saying to the government, stop it. Stop this crap. We are not going to accept it anymore, whatever the reasons are, whether it's the Second Amendment that has to be, you know, addressed, or, you know, the people who manufacture these guns has to be addressed. There has to be responsibility somewhere. And the people, you know, the NRA is on one side of the fence, and they're really, really pain people who have experienced unbelievable pain and suffering as a result of mad people with guns. So you got to stop it. It's got to be stopped. And if the kids do it, the kids are now becoming more adult than the adults.
And they're
have
doing
less
it, by the way. Yeah. I'm just saying
they
the kids are doing
state.
It in a very special way. They're really showcasing the First Amendment the way it should be showcased, at least for me, and that is they're doing it peacefully and they're doing it eloquently. And the eloquence is just overwhelming.
Well, yeah. I mean, hearing some of those kids, I was like, okay, you go, girl. But the fact that there are people in our government who are sitting on these seats, having been paid in part to be there from the NRA and people like that, that's what's wrong. You know, everybody's got somebody's money in their pocket, and they've got to, you know, whatever they've got to do, but it's not good. It's not democracy, number one, and number two, it's not taking care of kids the way we need to take care of kids. And that's what James Baldwin says. He says, what are we going to do about the children? And that's where the character in the
yeah. Go ahead and finish your thought, Christy.
Oh, no, I was just going to say that James Baldwin, you know, This is an interview that Anna was not present for. He did this interview in the 60s. But he talks about how incredibly there's a poem that one child writes, and he reads that, he says that poem out loud, and then he says, listen, you know, the curtain's going to come down on us whenever it comes down on us, but what are we going to do about the children? And that's the message. That's the message.
Bottom line, notes from the field. Anna Deavere Smith's presentation, must see television. You can see it this Saturday night, 8 p.m. Eastern Time and Pacific on HBO. Check your locals where HBO is available on the air, on cable and satellite. For more details, put the program online, HBO.com. Christy Z, Director of Notes from the Field, thank you for joining us. Congratulations to you and Anna on putting this together. I hope it really makes a big impact and a big difference to everybody watching. And all the best to your career going from this point forward, whether it's directing, production design, or both. It was a pleasure to have you on the program today.
Well, thank you. It's an honor to be here, and I just hope everybody can see this film because it's what we need to do next is open up the conversation.
Absolutely. Christy, take care. All the greatest.
Thank you. Thanks so much, everybody.
Take care. Christy Zia, Director of Notes in the Field, joining us live here in New York. Final time, the classic trivia question this week. Who played the first part of the figure on last week? If you know the answer, email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. Also find me on Facebook, follow me on Twitter. Coming up on our program Wednesday, we will have Scott Williams from NCIS and also the unique organization Shane's Inspiration and from Shoot the Messenger on WGN America, co-creator and lead director Sue Sutherland. That's all coming up Wednesday, 3 p.m. Eastern New Pacific, right here on Smarty Televised. If you came in late on today's program, want to catch up episodes you missed, www.blogsofreer.com/televised. Check out the iTunes podcast or Apple TV iTunes podcast app. We love hearing from you, so get with us by email, Facebook, or Twitter. Why? Because what you say matters. The views expressed in this program are those of the participants, not those of Blog Talk Radio. Our production associate, Candace Williams, Anytoast Blog Talk Radio's general manager, Jay Sumber, executive content producer. The co-founders of BTR, Anna Levy, and Bob Charish. Tomorrow We Televised is brought to you by Audible.com and Amazon Company. For Tomorrow We Televised, I'm Simon Applebaum in New York. Thank you for listening. Have a great rest of your President's Day 2018. We're back Wednesday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, right here on Blog Talk Radio. Until next time, stay well and stay tuned.